Welcome to Hala Talk. I'm Jack Yanover.
I'm Bobby Becker.
And in the studio today, we have none other than the Student Council President, Max Rosen. Max, feel free to introduce yourself.
First of all, Bobby and Jack, thank you for having me. It's really an honor to be on the show. I've looked forward to it for the past week, ever since you sent that invitation, so thank you. I'm Max Rosen. I'm the President of Student Council, and I'm also a senior at New Trier, class of 2020, and I'm excited to be on.
So, you're a Jew. You know Hala.
I am.
We got a challah here today. It's a Trader Joe's challah. And, I mean, why not? Let's just dive right in. This is a show about challah. We eat challah. We got to get into the challah.
Well, first, I want to know what Max Rosen's takes on challah, what he looks for in a challah, what he likes about a challah, because he is a Jew.
Well, in any challah, I look for flavor, number one. I love when challah is buttery, when it's really fluffy. The texture is extremely important. And already, I think this challah looks amazing. So I look forward to delving right in. That's kind of what I look for in the average challah.
Moist or dry? So far, everyone likes moist.
Yeah, I would go with moist.
Okay.
Dry is just, you don't want that, you know, in your mouth when you're eating it. You want moist challah for sure.
Now, because when I see a challah and I look at the outside, the level of shine is very important to me, at least in my anticipation of how it's going to taste. So this is a pretty shiny challah.
I can see my reflection.
Does that factor into your decision, whether or not to take a bite?
Definitely. The shinier, the better. I mean, that shows you right away that the challah is going to be good.
At least for me, my score is fully based off the taste, though. Like, the shine, that adds a good aspect to it, but that's not going to contribute to the final score.
Yeah, those are all side factors. I mean, like I said, the number one factor is taste.
I do think that the aesthetic definitely influences how it tastes, though, subconsciously. Maybe you don't notice it, Bobby, but when you see a beautiful challah and then you're eating it, I think it affects how you process the flavors.
So as two veteran challah tasters, I think we can respectfully disagree on this front.
That's fair. Well, without further ado, Bobby, you want to take the first bite? So while you're eating that, Max, you're the captain of the debate team, is that right?
I'm the captain of the Congress team, yes.
Of the Congress team, okay. No coincidences there. So I'm very curious, how do debate competitions work?
So debate competitions happen probably 2 or 3 times a month. Obviously, we don't have anyone on our team who goes to all of them in a month because they're so intense and they require so much preparation that going to back-to-back tournaments can be tough. I've done that a couple times this year and years past, but that can be extremely intense.
So, Max, I'm a very opinionated person, and I know you are a very opinionated person. Is it ever difficult arguing for the side that you do not agree with?
That's a great question, and debate has taught me how to argue the side I don't agree with. In fact, I just had a tournament yesterday and the whole weekend where I was arguing sides that I don't agree with in real life, but I was arguing them passionately. I had facts that supported them. And that's what's so key about debate, is that it teaches you that each side has facts to back them up, that each side can be explained, and that it's important to listen to other perspectives, because then you can learn how to take on those perspectives yourself. So when you're in a debate with someone, you understand their point of view better.
It's almost like how a chess player would prepare, by playing against themselves.
Yeah, I give speeches and prepare speeches on both sides all the time. Obviously, there's going to be one side that I personally agree with, but then I make it a point to understand the other side, because I never give a speech in a Congress round where I don't understand the points. And so even if it's a side I don't agree with, I want to make sure that I get it, that I have the facts to back it up, and that I understand the other perspective, which is what I practice all the time.
All right, so I'm going to give you a chance to take a bite of that challah. And while you're at it, Bobby, first opinions after that bite.
It grew on me. My first bite, I was like, it's a pretty good challah. Second bite, I grew to really like it, especially for just a Trader Joe's challah. This has a lot of taste, a lot of flavor toward it.
See, for me, I'm a very traditional guy when it comes to challah. I like the traditional challah flavor. And my biggest objection to this challah was it tastes a little artificial. Doesn't taste, I mean, maybe I was spoiled last week by Debbie Schoenfeld's fantastic challah with that genuine homemade challah taste. I don't know. I'm not really getting around to this. The texture, pretty good. The flavor, not really vibing with it.
I'm not really vibing with the crust. The crust is particularly low quality.
Max, your first thoughts?
At first, when I bit into it, it had that great buttery taste that I was looking for. So I really enjoyed that. The aftertaste is a little interesting. I don't know if you noticed that. So I can see where that artificial flavor comes from.
Absolutely.
But my first bite initially tasted great. And it's actually not that bad, you know, just from coming from Trader Joe's. So I really like it. It tastes great. The aftertaste could be a little better, though.
I'm going to give it a 3.5.
I'm going to go ahead and give it a 3 out of 6.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I'll give it a 4 out of 6. I think it was better than I expected.
All right, so a 10.5 out of 18. Not a terrible score. You know, what you would expect from a grocery store challah.
So, this challah, though you guys gave it pretty mediocre scores, one of the things I liked about it is when I went to Trader Joe's to get it, no lines at all. Just went straight out to it, bought the challah, took 2 seconds.
That's crazy because, at least at this school, when I'm going to get lunch, there's such a long line. I almost just don't get lunch. I think I should start bringing from home because the lines are so long. How do you feel about lunch lines?
We have addressed lunch lines just about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I'm glad this was brought up as it relates to challah. Maybe if challah was in the lunch lines, they would be even longer because challah is so good.
But that line would be out the
out the door. Like if we had challah bread at the sandwich station, that would be a headache for us. Believe
That'd
me,
be crazy.
So anyway, students suggested all the time, shorten the lunch lines, please. So we got to work on that about 2 weeks ago. I met with Quest, and Student Council got to work on reducing the lunch lines with a bunch of different measures. So, look, it's never going to be perfect, but we did introduce 2 major changes, moving grilled cheese to the pizza station, cutting down the sandwich line by creating 2 lines for custom orders, 1 for pre-made orders. And so we have reduced the lines. Students have given us positive feedback overall, but there's always more work to do.
One problem we have here, I think, and maybe you might be oblivious to this. I know you're eating steak frites and escargot in the student council room, but for us real Nutria students, there's a dilemma. And that dilemma is the lunch lines are so long. You know, a lot of Nutria students save their homework for their lunch period, and they have to decide when they get to lunch, should I do my homework or should I go and get in the lunch line? Because it's one or the other. That's how long it takes. Should we really live in a school where you have to make that decision?
Absolutely not. I believe that if you have to cram in your homework, study for that test next period, you should be able to. That's been one of our priorities is giving students more time during their lunch periods to not only do homework, but also just enjoy their time at school with their friends. And so that's why we've reduced the lunch lines in the sandwich line. There's still more work to do for the other lines. And we're trying to increase the amount of grab-and-go options like we did with grilled cheese, for example, because that was one of the most popular items and still is, to allow for students to just grab the food that they want instead of having to wait 20 minutes.
Now, I know that you probably don't have any, no, you have zero connection to this policy, but I'm just curious, as our student council president, how do you feel about growing claims that gym class or kinetic wellness should not be a 4-year requirement and is generally a complete waste of time?
Well, I certainly can sympathize with some of those claims. And we have actually inquired about the kinetic wellness policy at Nutria.
Really?
And I think it has to do with state law more than it has to do with Nutria.
So actually, state law requires that people go to gym classes, what is it, 3 times a week?
3 times a week.
Okay. And if we line that up with the lab days, what we can do is we can give every student who takes a science class and a gym 1 free period every day.
That's a great proposal. Yeah, that's certainly something we can bring up. And also, students have avenues to bring that up to the Board of Education. You can attend a meeting and bring that up to them. Because when it comes to Board of Education and Nutria policy, it's extremely hard for student council to change those policies. We certainly can advocate for students. That's our job and our number one mission. But I would love to see that materialize and come to fruition of having a different policy so students don't have to spend 4 years in kinetic wellness, spend 20 minutes of their period changing, spend 5 minutes with announcements, and then spending 5 minutes to play volleyball or pickleball.
Very good breakdown of the average KW day. Yeah, not the most efficient use of time. I'm very anti-KW, if you couldn't tell in my question. Personally,
he doesn't like being seen with his shirt off. It's not a pretty sight.
I think it's a complete waste of time. As someone who is loaded with homework, those 40 minutes are so painful because I just want to get stuff done. Or even like take an art class or something interesting. So yeah, I was compelled to make a KW documentary. But when I met with the KW department chair, he was very opposed to an interview that asked any real questions about the validity of KW departmental operations. So we shut down. I wish that we carried that forward, but it's still an issue I'm very passionate about.
Well, you know, they're in a tough situation because the workers who work at for KW who are gym teachers, they're unionized. They get paid 6 figures. In my opinion, a lot of them I love, a lot of them are lovely, a lot of them don't do much.
They watch us play volleyball, though.
They watch us play volleyball. So the fact that there's real money that people are getting from this establishment, which is clearly pretty outdated, and that's what is holding it in place, I think that's very problematic.
I see how it's problematic, and again, there's only so much that we can do. Those decisions kind of
this
lie
is not
with...
this is not me ranting at you. I'm sure you can't fire teachers.
Yeah,
I know. At the end of the day,
and
you're
that's
a student.
The thing is, you know, sometimes we understand the issues that are important to students, and we're like, we really wish we could do something. We really wish we could just change the policy, but KW has to stay, and doing pointless volleyball exercises and pickleball warm-ups is unfortunately going to have to be the norm.
So, gym class, you can get excused if you're an athlete doing an actual sport, but only if it's through the school. So we know that some hockey players don't get out when they're doing club hockey, or, you know, you're doing a sport outside the school, you don't get out, club soccer. As a junior, I decided to join track and field because junior year is the first year that they actually allow you to do a sport and then get excused from KW. And I didn't do it sophomore year, and I didn't do it freshman year. My primary incentive to run track was knowing that I would get out of gym class. So, it is my belief that if we were to remove KW and give students a period where they could get more homework done, more kids would actually pursue extracurricular physical activities that have real physical benefits, whereas we are currently forcing kids into KW class where, first of all, if you're trying really hard in KW, that's fine, but no one tries really hard in KW.
Right.
And second of all, there is a stigma to going all out on the basketball court at gym class, and for good reason.
True.
Because no one wants to get dunked on at fifth period after they ate lunch.
Right.
And no one wants to be drenched in sweat. I believe that KW actually having that as a four-year requirement, which is exclusive to the state of Illinois, is actually a deterrent from positive physical activity.
That's an interesting point, and I've never heard that perspective before. And I think that's extremely valid because, you know, you also don't want to be that kid in KW who's the try-hard, who's like going all out and everyone's looking at you like, what are you doing?
So you're a political figure, and naturally, with being a politician, you're going to have critics. One of the most interesting things I've heard your critics say is that the Bean Team, which you created, is actually the number one drug dealer at New Trier. How do you feel about this accusation?
Well, I certainly haven't heard that before.
See, caffeine is a legitimate addictive drug. I would know, because last year I was addicted to caffeine, and my dad said, hey, Jack, you got to stop drinking coffee. I said, all right, sure. And the next day I had a throbbing headache, which continued for about two and a half weeks.
You know, and what we see here is the school only cares about enforcing drug policy for substances they do not profit off of.
And not to mention, while we are very strict on our kinetic wellness policy to keep all of New Trier students healthy, at every checkout line, it is loaded with candy bars and soda. So moving on to a totally separate school-wide health crisis, we're going to talk about the temperatures in our classrooms. And, you know, anyone who's been at this school has noticed there is a significant increase in the temperatures of these classrooms over the last 4 years. 97% of science teachers have said that this is a severe problem. And actually, I talked to a science teacher recently who told me she thinks if we don't make changes now, the entire new wing will be underwater by 2050.
Oh my. Well, maybe we need to introduce a Green Team New Deal or something of those sorts to try to ensure that we become carbon neutral.
Obviously, you're very well spoken. You've been doing student council for the last 4 years. Zach Becker wants to know, do you want to be a politician someday or even president of the United States?
In the words of Andrew Yang from the last debate, I don't fantasize about being president. I think being a politician or being in higher office is something that you have to know is right for you at the time. And it's not something that I look at like, oh, I'm going to work really hard and do this X, Y, and Z to become president or to become a politician. If that's where I happen to be one day, then I think it was meant to be, and that's just my fate. And so that's kind of how I look at anything in life, that I can want things, I can desire things, but ultimately my fate will decide that. And, you know, again, like Yang said, like other politicians say, I really respect when they talk about how president is not a job that you just want for the sake of having power. It's a position that you should want to make a difference and to give other people opportunities. That's kind of why I ran for president. It wasn't to just, you know, say I'm president. It's to help other people, which I hope and I know that we are doing right now.
So you did something very clever the campaign.
I mean, both you guys did a great job, but the rap that came out of nowhere. I think, I think you captured the shock value of the room.
Right. Yeah, and I'm glad people think of it as a rap because it's more of like a poem, but I guess a rap. Well, it was actually probably more fire than a poem. But
yeah, do you plan to release an album anytime soon?
if students want that, I would be open to that.
So we're going to transition into a little bit of a game. You're a debater. Bobby, we get into debates all the time. I'd say you're a pretty good debater.
I'd say I'm a master debater.
So we got a debate game here. We took some scenarios from our favorite shows. Larry David often finds himself in interesting moral dilemmas, and so we took one here for you to argue with. So, Max, I'm going to have you argue on behalf of David Schwimmer. Bobby, I'm going to have you argue on behalf of Larry David. Now, here's the scenario. I'll play it out for you. David Schwimmer, you, Max, you have a watch, a nice watch. You lose said watch. Now, Bobby finds your lost watch, but before he has time to return it to you, he loses it again.
Oh, no.
Now, you believe that Bobby should have to reimburse you for the lost watch because he lost your already lost watch. Bobby does not believe you should have to pay for this watch.
I'm right, because that was my property. You found it. You had a duty to protect it because you knew it didn't belong to you. Knowingly having property left unattended or left exposed to other people that isn't yours is, in a sense, especially after you took the first step to get it, is leaving it totally exposed to strangers to take it, and therefore you have to give it back to me. You have a duty to protect it because you made the first step of taking it back in the first place and making sure that it was found.
Yeah, so if I never found lost the watch in the first place, you would never have it back. So by me losing the watch, I am in a completely neutral state. If I were to give you to a watch, that would be, sure, it would be me fulfilling my civic duty, but it would also increase my view of you in your eyes. If I lose the watch, if I don't have the watch, you're back to a neutral state.
Let me just say one more thing. If you found the watch and you decided not to take it with you and just leave it, then that's another thing. And then it was stolen again, let's say. Then you don't have a duty to return it to me or to protect it. But you took that first step of taking the watch. You had it. You knew you had it. And you should have protected it.
So you're saying by the act of me doing the good thing, of me taking the watch to try to give it back to you, by the act of me being a good civic citizen, I am now endowed with responsibility.
You took on an additional burden.
But then you were creating a system where I am de-incentivized to help you. Because if I do help you, I have to take on additional burden and now I have to pay you back. So next time, under the system you have, if I see a watch that's my friend's, I'm just going to leave it there.
We have another debate topic here. This one comes from the hit Netflix show, BoJack Horseman. In season 1, episode 2 of BoJack Horseman, Bobby, you're going to debate in the place of BoJack Horseman here. Max, you're going to debate in place of Navy SEAL veteran, Meal McBeal,
awesome.
The Navy SEAL. You are in the grocery store. You're walking around. You see some muffins that look really tasty. You grab them, and then you're in the produce section. And, you know, you don't have enough room in your cart. So you put the muffins to the side. You put them in the produce section. Go about 10 feet away. And when you return, you notice that the muffins are gone. And you actually see that Bobby is holding that box of muffins. And he doesn't even want these muffins. He's just buying them out of spite. Convince us. Convince Bobby why he should give you that box of muffins back.
First of all, you never disrespect veterans. That's number one. If veterans want their muffins, you give them their muffins. They gave you your freedom. And so I would say, I got the muffins first. Don't take them away. If you wanted them, you can go buy some other ones. But as a veteran, disrespecting me is crossing the line.
Yeah, I don't think by a veteran, by that virtue alone, you deserve some sort of respect from me to give you the muffins, okay? First of all, if you wanted them so badly, you shouldn't have let them down. That puts them in a grocery store.
That was gross negligence.
In a system of a grocery store, if you put food down, that's open for the taking from everyone else. So I have the right to take those muffins. And the fact that you served in a war and you've killed people or whatever you veterans do, means nothing to me.
All right. Well, it has been great to have you on the show, Max. Thank you so much for coming. I know you're a busy guy. You're dealing with lots of legislation all the time. But thank you for coming on. Thank you for listening to our questions. Obviously, we don't give softballs here on Hala Talk. We come with pointed questions. We're out to challenge you, but I appreciate you stepping into the war room. Did a great job. Thank you for being here. I hope you enjoy the Hala. 10.5 out of 18. We can do better next time, so maybe we'll have to have you back.
Not in the Hall of Fame.
Definitely not Hall of Fame quality.
Yeah, Hall of Fame. Not in there.
Nowhere close to Debbie Schoenfeld's masterpiece from last episode. But appreciate you coming on the show. This has been Hala Talk. We'll be back next week.
Thank you both for having me.